Hello everyone and welcome back to the Relay Bitcoin podcast. Really happy to be joined by Alex McShane. Thank you for taking the time. You are a very busy guy, obviously, like most of the people that are in this podcast. And now there's probably the final preparations going on for the big conference in Amsterdam that you are co-organizing. Thanks for finding the time. How are you today?
I'm doing well, man. It's great to see you again. And yeah, it's busy times, I think, for everyone in Bitcoin. It's just, bottom of the bear market here. Everybody's scrambling to put something together to capitalize on the bull market.
Yeah, it's a total different time. You probably also had both the bear and the bull markets, right, that you already experienced. Same for us, actually, at Relay. Yeah, it's a very busy time. But actually, for us, it's quite good. Despite the bear market, people are really, because we are targeting a lot of these, Bitcoin maximalists or enthusiasts or newcomers that just find out that Bitcoin only, not like shitcoin trading, but Bitcoin only is the thing. These guys are committed. And once they start stacking, they keep stacking. And when there's a dip, they buy the fucking dip, which is why we are very busy and really happy, actually. But I agree that many of other, players in the space are probably struggling. Are you struggling with the, with any projects that you're doing, mainly the conference? It doesn't seem like it, right? It seems like it's going to be a big one again.
Yeah, I think on some level we're struggling with every project. It's just nobody has money. It's hard, the bear market's always hard and fun. But I think everybody's kind of spread thin and just, working kind of tirelessly. So The Amsterdam conference is going to be a lot of fun. Like the nice thing is we've been there before. We've worked with the same team before. It's the same location. So we're having a lot easier time like solving problems that we've already solved. So, the scale of it is going to be ironed out. Maybe there were some kinks like as an attendee. Maybe you noticed last year it's like solved. You know what I mean? It's just going to be a smooth experience. Kind of like B23. Like finally, we've been going conference after conference. That was the first one I've done where it just felt everything went basically well. I mean, there were no huge fires. It was pretty stress-free on the ground. Like that's what we're aiming for. Just a nice time for everybody.
Yeah, it was really nice. That's also where we finally met and connected physically, right? Last year in Amsterdam. It was really, really good. So it was also the first time I met Jeff Booth in person, and there were all these very big names like Natalie Brunel, Greg Foss, and it was just amazing because there's also not this big kind of VIP thing where everyone is just hanging around in VIP. Obviously, there's this VIP sector, but many of these, big names were just chilling with the plebs, and it was a really good atmosphere. I really liked it. And as you said, everything went really smooth, but also big, like this American kind of style that you bring to Europe, because many of the European conferences are like also very smooth, well organized, and obviously you always have fun with Bitcoiners, but you bring this thinking big and thinking global spirit to Europe with this conference, which I find really, really nice.
Yeah, it's a definitely different culture. It's a different audience that we're catering to, and it's just kind of a totally different culture on the ground. So there's a lot of interesting problems that come up. One would be just kind of actually finding talent. Like there's a lot of really good like company and technical talent for Bitcoin and a lot of enthusiasts on the ground in Europe. But I would say they don't actually have the same culture of building up these influencers who speak to the masses by country, right? So it's like, who do we actually bring to speak to these people that they're, familiar with on the ground? It becomes a kind of interesting problem.
Yeah, right. There are these influential names, but they're really few. And many of them are also kind of more on the German-speaking, focus on the German-speaking part. On the other countries, I mean, it's also so spread out and distributed because there is more than 40 different countries on the same continent. It's not like the US where You know, it's basically one country that is huge. Maybe there is kind of more of a breeding ground of these big influencers that have a really, you know, followership and reach. It's more really country by country, so they are still smaller and more focused. So how did you go about finding the right people to be on stage and kind of the most influential people? Are you just taking the guys that are from the US that are really influential globally, or did you find local names as well?
I think it's important to look at the demographics of who's attending. So understanding our audience and trying to figure out who they want to see. It's not really who's most influential. That's my framework is more like who is the best in class speaker for a given Bitcoin topic, or perhaps a Nostr topic, or kind of a Bitcoin adjacent subject. So it's really about who has expertise, not necessarily credentials, but who has a track record of maybe speaking about something interesting or innovating in the space in a way that's obviously like novel and, you know, you really want a platform. Who are doing things controversial, you know? We often have panels that are like purely, completely Bitcoin related, but they're huge, you know, culture war, controversial kind of going on, and people want to cancel us for that stuff too. So it's like finding a balance of all these things to make sure people are getting, like, I guess if they're a newcomer, I hope that they leave with like an education, you know, they've got some 101 topics, some workshops, they learn about self-custody, they learn why Bitcoin is fundamentally different from fiat and especially fundamentally different from all the other cryptocurrencies, you know, and they kind of get the freedom and enough options in our programming to choose what route they want to take. You know, do I want to use a cold card, do I want to use a seed signer, do I want to use, you know, Ledger, like just as an example. So yeah, I think it's about giving people options about what to attend, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you are you expecting more kind of newcomers to the space, or is it because it's a bear market, it's probably mainly going to be the orange guys that are on every conference?
Yeah, it'll probably be a lot of orange guys in very, you know, cringe bright orange jackets and stuff. But I think there's some newcomers that come with everyone, but I think they're brought by people who are already in the space, you know? I mean, I've noticed this. I've brought people myself. I'm like, no, just come. I'll give you a ticket. Like, come to this event and just experience it and learn something, you know? But I think the majority are maybe like, I don't know, 30, 40% Dutch people, but like large majority Europeans. And then you get a few diehards that fly out from the States to come attend or speak. But most of your United States speaking contingent is either already going to be in the area, because there's a whole series of conferences in the fall. You know, we're like totally oversaturated with conferences, which is hilarious. It's a bear market. The extra inventory doesn't increase the demand. Like, people don't have any more money to go to these things. They still have to just pick. They're like, I'm going to one conference this year. Where do I go? You know? It's like every weekend there's a conference. There's one right now in Texas. Yeah. Like,
I wonder where this comes from, because it's not so lucrative. I mean, the top maybe 10% of the conferences that are really big and they get all the big names, they might make some money, but even there, you're not going to be like, you're not getting rich with organizing a conference, right? But then all these others, they're actually probably losing money. Why are so many doing it?
Yeah, that's the interesting thing. I would say it can be extremely lucrative, but it's not going to be the first try you hit it out of the park. I mean, you look at something like Bitcoin Prague, that was probably like the most exciting new conference on the scene. But the actual question that no one's asking is, were any of their practices sustainable? I mean, can you get speakers there again without spending the money you spent? And can you move into a profitable endeavor? That's a much harder task and a much taller order. And it doesn't even start counting until year two and year three, when you can keep this staff year round and you're not just swapping out contractors. And it's a mess, and it's a hard game to play. And I think people kind of underestimate that, like, one reason why so many people get into it. But also, there is so much money to be had when the market's frothy and it's a bull market and there are all these companies sprouting up, especially in like crypto land, giving them a platform, giving them booth space, letting them speak on stage, like, you know, just for a couple grand. I mean, that adds up very quickly over the course of 2 or 3 days. Now we don't operate pay for play like that, but you see these models happening basically, yeah, mm-hmm. all over the crypto and Bitcoin space. It gets pretty pretty like fiat-y. It's like a fine line to do these things kind of ethically and well at scale, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. How did you get into this? Why was it interesting for you to co-organize a conference? I mean, you go to a lot of conferences, I know, but now you're also you also became an organizer.
Yeah, I started as a writer in the space, an editor. And so that keeps you really up to date. I mean, I was getting up at like 4 or 5 in the morning and doing the news cycle, right? And writing 3 to 5 articles a day about Bitcoin for a long time. Wow. And that keeps you up to date with what's happening very well. And you learn all the major kind of people very quickly. And, that's really what events are about. It's like, what's happening right now? What's like the most bullish thing that's happening? What's the most bearish thing that's happening? How do we talk about it? And if you know all those angles, it's kind of a sensible shift. But like on a more logistical level, I took over the media part of Bitcoin Magazine and spun up some teams to grow our Twitter, you know, a couple million followers, our YouTube channel, and just started getting good at like managing people and growing multimedia products. And then I don't know if you remember the news desk. You must. You were on it. So that was an innovation that we brought to the conferences. That was my project. And it was a really good, you mentioned this earlier, it was a really good place for plebs to mingle with like influencers and people they look up to in the space, you know, authors, kind of public figures that are, you know, talking heads on television or like chart boys. You know, you got Dylan LeClaire hanging out there. You got Adam Back, you know. We also have some fun, like not super Bitcoin people, but who like own Bitcoin or are interested in it. You know, Dave Portnoy, Ben Askren, just kind of like fun celebrities. It's a good place for everyone to rub shoulders in the center of the exhibitor hall or kind of like off the main stage. So that was my first project. Organizing all of that, building that product, and then it's kind of a natural step, like let's do this at scale, let's do all the stages, you know. And I've been doing that since. I also organized Nostrasia, Jack Dorsey's, well, we call it Nostr.world is the website, and we do Nostr conferences all over the world. So I organized one in Costa Rica, which was super. It was probably one of the most fun conferences I've ever been to. It was a blast. It was just small.
I've heard.
Yeah, I don't know. I hope other people had as good a time as I did, but it was very fun. In the Costa Rican jungle, it took like a day to get out there and like find the place. But if you found it, you're having a great time with us surfing and you know eating steak. The next one we're doing is in Tokyo. And at Tokyo, yeah, we're going to have a little meeting and decide where next in the world to go. But we have one in Tokyo and Hong Kong this November. So pretty exciting.
Hey, everyone. This is Anna from Relay. I want to tell you about Relay Private. It's our exclusive service for private clients, family offices, and small or medium-sized companies looking to buy or sell large amounts of Bitcoin. As a Relay Private client, you have a full team focusing on your needs. A dedicated account manager guides you every step of the way. You also get personalized 24/7 support and gain access to exclusive reports and industry insights created by Relay. If that sounds like something you or somebody you know should check out, click the link in the description or head over to relay.app/private.
Damn, what brought you into Nostr and why do you think this is next to Bitcoin super, super interesting? I mean, just like... Is it so close? I'm still trying to figure out my way into this. I'm just going to ask you, like, what was your turn into Nostr?
I found it in like late November, December of last year, I believe. So it's been a short ride, but wild, because that was kind of the like Cambrian explosion of Nostr, where, you know, you get 500,000 people using this thing almost overnight and using it religiously for the most part. I think the main difference is like you understand, if you understand private public key pairs, that this is inherently censorship resistant, like, and the way it works, distributed network of relays, I can't be censored. Like, I can spin up as many accounts as I want. I can say whatever I want. You as a client, like, let's say you're using the Domus app on iPhone, maybe that client can choose to censor certain people. We just had a little shenanigan with Primal. It's like they're boosting these people and not these people. They're always like uplifting a bunch of kind of random influencers. And if you don't like that behavior, you can either build your own client because it's all free and open source, or you can just check out one of the many competing clients. So it's a lot more like equitable experience for the user. You know, you're not coerced into using some algorithm that you don't know anything about. So I would say, like, I was a Twitter user for a long time, very good at it, you know, understood like inherently like what does well and what does not well. But being forced to operate like within those behaviors and being forced to view, I shouldn't say forced. I mean, it's not like, whoa, is me, I had to use Twitter, but it's like, you can tell that the algorithm kind of promotes conflict and a very toxic experience, a lot of violence. Like, my timeline is full of violence for no reason on Twitter, you know? You're seeing all these fights, like riots, it's like COVID, political, this and that. And it's just, I mean, that is not the world that I exist in. Like, in real life, I look outside, everything's beautiful, it's fine. That's not what's happening. So why am I being fed this every day to drive engagement? Okay, so you have all these, and then there's like the censorship question. You get censored on Twitter. I'm sure it's happened to most people at some point or another. You go over the line, you say something. Maybe you don't go over the line. Maybe you just want to talk about, hey, rolling out experimental like medication and forcing populations, and you just get a boom, like you're done. So I mean, I've experienced a lot of censorship through YouTube too, and my point is just that none of these things happen on Nostr, and it's not even like the real potential of this thing hasn't even come close to being realized, because it's not just a social media platform. That's not what it is. It's a free and open source protocol for communication, but you can communicate anything. You can develop apps on top of this. People do in like new and exciting ways. You can develop middleware that's exclusively like, I don't know, for businesses to communicate with other businesses. You can make personalized apps that don't speak to the rest of kind of the network there. You can make internal, like you could theoretically build something like a Slack or like a basically the IRC chats to communicate with people that are private and cut off from the rest of the world. And there's just so many ways, because it's free and open and always has been. There's so many people building new and exciting things on it. It's just a better model than this sort of top-down cathedral model of Twitter. Like, Nostr is more like a bazaar. You know, there's just bustling, decentralized building all over the place. It's not this, like, one kind of reverent algorithm model. So, yeah, that's sense on that.
Yeah, that was a very, very good, like, overview and pitch. Probably the best I've heard so far. So that makes me think that it doesn't have a lot to do with Bitcoin necessarily, and it's not just an alternative to Twitter or any other social media app. It's more on the deeper level, like the internet, like an alternative for the internet that has become very centralized, like dominated by, you know, a handful of players, like Meta, for example, and Google. And this is basically the antithesis to the internet, to bring it basically back peer to peer, open source, decentralized as it was designed at one point.
Exactly. And, you know, compared to some of your cleaner cut, like multi-billion-dollar corporate products, it's a bit of a rough experience for people the first time jumping in. Like, this is a new thing. It's only a couple years old. And it's only in the last year that anyone's really gave a shit about it. So, like, it's growing, and it's growing tremendously fast. And I think the other appeal to it is people that are there sense that, and they're enjoying that ride. Because how great is it to be early to something? I mean, we all wish we'd gotten into Bitcoin, you know, just a few years earlier than we did. No matter when you got in, doesn't matter. You always wish you'd got in a little earlier. It's kind of like that. I mean, there's not like inherent financial gain to be had, but I guess to answer your question about Bitcoin, it kind of echoes Bitcoin in the distributed nature, but Bitcoin is a essential part of making it fun. I mean, Zaps, a lot of people think Zaps were invented for Nostr. That's not actually true. Like, Zaps have been around for a long time. Tipping people in Bitcoin has been around for a long time, but they really found their home in Nostr. So, you know, there's just one BIP. It's not the whole... NIP. It's not the whole protocol, but there is one kind of implementation of it and several more kind of coming down the line. I'm actually working on one myself where you can send economic signal rather than basically virtue signal via like. Mm-hmm. So instead of a like, you send someone a pre-specified amount of sats. You can choose whatever you want. You can send it directly to their profile. But the crazy thing about this is, like, I'll give you an example. For Nostrasia, for, like, Bitcoin Amsterdam, there's people like, I want to go, I can't afford it. I'm like, do a fundraiser, put one up. So they'll post something to Nostr, and the community will crowdsource them. I mean, it happens time and time again. There are always people raising money for something. You know, maybe it's even a project or a business you can now raise in a distributed way that the state really can't fuck with. They can't turn it off. They can't stop you. They can't interfere with the transaction. It's like, from me to Julian, I support Relay. Here's my money. Go, go, go. You know, these tips they're very powerful for content creators too. And you think like, oh, a couple sats, like that's not going to add up. It does, especially if you're using this platform. I mean, it's, yeah, you can make good money. You look at someone like Max DeMarco. I mean, he made a pretty good documentary about Nostr and then put out and said like, hey, like I need money to kind of keep doing this thing. And people sent him like a couple $1,000 like overnight, you know, helped him out. So the value for value culture there is very strong. There's no way to say if it'll always be that way, but the option to use those Bitcoin kind of services on top of Nostr has always made sense, and it's always going to be there on some of the clients for sure, you know.
Yeah. I just wonder, do you think that a decentralized alternative, now coming back to Nostr as people use it right now, mostly is just as a social media platform, right, as an alternative to Twitter or now X, which also has its own problems, a lot of problems. Actually, there's kind of a movement going on that people are moving away from Twitter or X because of the way Elon Musk is running it now, which again shows the problems of kind of such a centralized entity that can just be bought by a guy from another guy, and then he basically just turns it around. And so a lot of people are moving away from that and are looking for alternatives. Do you think that it can become like the main choice of people? What needs to happen until so that it really reaches these critical masses? Because right now it hasn't yet. I mean, yes, half a billion users and stuff like that. I think they have a lot is happening already, but it's still not, it hasn't reached the critical masses, right? What needs to happen?
Yeah, as you speak there, I'm just pulling up. I want to know how many accounts have been created precisely. Let's see if I can find it here.
Yeah, I'd also be interested.
But so to answer your question, yes, I absolutely think this can become the preferred network of the world. I think it's objectively better. Just on a fundamental, like how it works, than everything else that's out there in terms of a social media platform. But like I said before, there are things in the works that are going to be coming to this that are going to be unstoppable, uncensorable, that will kind of change the game of the internet in the way that Bitcoin did. And, you know, decentralized exchanges will be one of them, like free, truly free and open markets. will be one, you know, sent across Nostr events, you know, all kinds of trades, buying and selling. Like, this will cause all kinds of, I'm sure, scandals and uproars and a lot of noise that'll attract people to the platform, because it's a beautiful thing to be able to transact freely without state interference at all. You know, it's a tool, so you get kind of both sides of it. That's the trade-off of the free communication. But I think there are a lot of, like, really sane, smart people out there that are getting really sick of having to watch what they say and how they behave to appease whatever political, you know, person is at the helm. And we saw that transition with Twitter. Like, Elon did not make Twitter free speech, like, centric. That didn't happen. That's not the case. You don't have free speech on Twitter. Yeah. You don't have it on Threads. You don't have it anywhere. It's only Nostr. I think to answer your question, how do we get there? Well, we, the builders, have to build the things that people want. We have to make them easier to use. We have to make the design better, you know, faster, stronger, more reliable. We have to figure out a new way to do the kind of backdoor messaging, or the DM system's not very good because, like, other people can peer in. They can't read your messages, but they can see who you've been messaging. So that's a little bit creepy. We got to do away with that. From a social media standpoint, like, it's got a long way to go, but it's going there, and it's going there in leaps and bounds. People are pushing updates to their clients every single day. And it's kind of hard to express if you haven't seen it, how fast, like, the rate of progress and change has been, because it's just such a enthusiastic community behind it. So I'm optimistic it can get there. I think the hard part for it is people are inherently susceptible to this trade-off of convenience over privacy. So time and time again, we see, like, the masses take this trade every day of the week. They're like, no, just scan my face real quick. Let me use the app, please, you know. No, here's all my fingerprints. Like, let me check out just with my hand, you know, at the grocery store. It's terrifying. They're not thinking long term. They're not thinking of the consequences of this kind of behavior. And I want to think, like, one side of me says, okay, CBDCs are coming, but they're objectively worse money in every conceivable way. They're in fact not money. They're like a worse version of credit even than the US dollar. So people will reject them out of hand. But then you see, like, the incentives that will be made, or the malincentives for not using them, you know. Okay, well, you won't be able to get gas, like, outside of this, you know, mile radius from your house. Or, like, you know, you posted this unsavory thing. Now you don't get to, I don't know, eat lunch. Or now you don't get to use this platform for this amount of time. And you can't kind of buy your way back in. Like, programmable money that's centralized to that degree is, like, a terrible idea. I guess where I'm going with it is, like, I can't just hope that we'll build a great product and people will just choose it because it's objectively better. Like, the task is very much on us to bring it to them and to show them that, and to educate people in some ways. Like, it does take a little bit of evangelizing, just like Bitcoin does, spreading awareness, spreading education, get people their first, second, third, fourth touch points until it finally clicks. And the ask is not for everyone to leave Twitter and join Nostr. Now, many of us choose to do that because we find it's a better experience, but the ask is more like, give it a try. You've got nothing to lose. I think you'll find it a very liberating and exciting experience. And it's cool to watch things grow and be early to something, you know, really strong new technology. So.
Absolutely. It seems many people already enjoy it. 16 million users and 780,000 daily active users. That's a lot already.
Well, we're at 554,000 users, 66 million notes sent, 33 million accounts created. So you can see there's a lot of people creating multiple accounts, learning how to use it, accidentally compromising their accounts. The curve is real. Like, it's different to use than putting in your email and just, you know, giving up all your information and having an account forever. It's very different to manage private and public keys. And then 13.45 Bitcoin have been sent over this network, which is great in tips. You know.
That's a lot of tips. It's nice, and I agree with you. I mean, this all despite is still not really made for the broad masses in terms of UX UI. It's still not as convenient to use, and but it will at one point. This is kind of a technical problem to solve, and it will be solved in the next months and years, right? But I agree with you that what we need to do with these technologies that at first sight are they do have a lot of advantages, but they're not as easy to use at the beginning. Only early adopters and evangelists are using them. I believe Bitcoin is still also in that realm, right? What we need to do is to make it just super easy, better, easier than using normal money, for example, or easier than using Twitter. And it has the potential for that, right? So when you think about Lightning, for example, to pay with Lightning will be in a year or two from now easier than to pay with, you know, Cash App or any other means of payments, credit card, whatever. And then that's when the big kind of delayed adopters, which is the majority of human beings, that's when they will find out, and that's where the whole rush will start. This was the same with the internet as well. Like for 20 years or 25 years, people didn't want to use the internet because it was too hard. And then all of a sudden they felt like, oh, it's actually easier to buy a book online than to go to my next bookstore and buy one, you know, and that's where it makes click. But it needs to be more user-friendly than the way people did something before. And sometimes this can take decades, right? So we're in it for the long run here.
Yeah. And, the accelerating and compounding effect. I think the fact that it's free and open source really is the kicker here. I mean, that's what allows like massive growth. It's not being developed. You saw the kind of disaster of Blue Sky was developed completely behind closed doors, comes out as this decentralized alternative. Turns out it is, in fact, completely centralized from certain standpoints. And they're just headed completely the wrong direction. And it just turned into this kind of like leftist hellhole. And it's like, meanwhile, we've been building in all directions, trying and failing everything under the sun, and just making incremental iterative improvements basically every day to this protocol. I mean, the amount of things that are being proposed, I just urge people to go check out the GitHub and just watch. Like, just watch it grow. It's beautiful, you know?
Wow. And Jack Dorsey is one of the proponents, which is also interesting, right? He's moving away from Twitter, let Elon take it over, and then building this and kind of incubating this new alternative, which is much bigger, as you said, than social media. And a lot of also Jeff Booth and a lot of influential names are kind of doing their first steps on that, which will lead millions of others to use it as well and build on it. And there's also now a lot of money that is funneled into it. So yeah, it could be pretty wild the next couple of years.
Yeah, there's companies formed on it that are raising, you know, $1 million, like more even. So it's a legitimate ecosystem. You've got Edward Snowden on there. You've got RFK. I actually put RFK's campaign manager on there to help him kind of get. Yeah. I met him in Florida and talked to him. And he actually handed me his phone and I downloaded Noster and we took a profile picture. It was hilarious. So he's on Noster now. And
that's so good.
Yeah. We're just trying to get. I mean, like, the influential people are, that's always like fun and good, and it brings kind of a wave of new adoption. But really, it's like the culture of kind of the individual and people for the first time really being themselves online for a long time, like since the true like early internet where you could really make a website about fucking anything and just if you could send some people to it, you know what I mean? This is like, I don't know, man. It's exciting. I think it does come down to just like one by one, these people making the communities they want to see and making, for example, like I'm really into jiu-jitsu. I've found probably every other person on Noster that's into jiu-jitsu. And we tend to post a lot and talk a lot and share a lot about jiu-jitsu. And now it's like there's a jiu-jitsu community. And now other Noster users are DMing us saying, hey, I live in this area. Do you know a gym I can go to? Like, how do I start? people are going every week. Like, I'm going to try it. I'm going to take my daughter to it. And it's like, okay, well, now you have like a functional tool that's like affecting the lives of people in a pretty profound way, you know? So.
Absolutely. It's all about building the network. And you talked a little bit about companies that are being built there. And in your kind of, in the Bitcoin area of your work, are you still involved with Lightning Ventures and Mike Sharmus? And what if yes, what's your role there? Or what other kind of roles that, do you have next to obviously your responsibilities at Bitcoin Magazine?
Yeah, so it's Bitcoin Magazine, it's the Nostr conferences, and then it's Lightning Ventures, man. And I'm a general partner at Lightning Ventures. I, you know, help seek good founders and companies that are in the Bitcoin space, making noise and developing great products and services, and we invest in them. You know, it's venture, it's highly... highly reckless from a stay humble and stack sats point of view, but it's also, you know, very lucrative. It's super fun. It's almost, it's honestly like basically pays for itself just in the reward of getting to know everyone in Bitcoin and getting to know all the amazing founders, like what they're building, how they're building it, where they need help connecting, you know, this person needs miners. Okay. This person has rack space. Okay. This person has energy. Let's get on a call. Like, it's very fun.
Are you a general partner at the fund? Because I know there's a fund, but there's also the syndicate, right?
Right.
Where a couple of hundred angels are investing in Bitcoin only startups, but Lightning Ventures then also usually invest in these deals with their own fund. So are you involved in both?
Yeah. So I work on all three. I invest in all three. We have two funds right now. One is technically open. We haven't really pushed it out there yet, but I'm a general partner of Fund 2, so it's Node 2 Fund. I worked on the Fund 1. We're just finishing closing that up. I worked as a, you know, I work in the syndicate in helping construct some of these deals, write some memos, spread the word. The syndicate's nice because it really gives, I guess for lack of a better word, like plebs and regular people a really low hurdle to jump in. I mean, in almost every case, our syndicates are $1,000 minimums, which is, you know, almost most people, if they really want to, can find the funds to invest in that if it's a great opportunity. I guess the kicker that I always say before people run off and try to like do venture is like the comparison you're making is not whether or not this is a great deal. It's will this outperform Bitcoin over the same 5-10 year time span? Because if it won't, don't make that investment. It's not worth it. You know, just buy Bitcoin instead. But yeah.
What is the, so this fund too, is there any specification of like, are you is investing in a specific region of the world or in specific cases or in a specific level of the startup, super early stage or a bit later stage? Or is it just, you know, because you're investing a lot, like Lightning Ventures has probably, how many cases have you already supported now?
Probably like 75 to 100, like individual, like lots of individual. We're definitely like the most active Bitcoin venture fund in the space. There's a lot of big flashy names. We're kind of more like the little guys. We have this advantage where a lot of these big names, what they do is they kind of overshoot, so they raise too much money and then we hit this bear market and they have nowhere to invest it and they start making bad decisions, putting too much money into certain companies, putting money into companies that are not really Bitcoin companies. Then you end up like Castle Island Ventures and you're just a fucking crypto VC now. Like, it's a big problem. So actually our thesis is like, let's start small, let's actually like fill out our round and let's just make good decisions. So, you know, our fund one is like almost done and we feel comfortable with like all of those investments. Like, we did the best we could. You know, these were great shots on goal. There were even more things we wanted to invest in, but we couldn't because, you know, we stayed humble, reasonable amount of money raised. Fund two, okay, we've got experience now, you know, we've been hitting it out of the park. Let's like grow that amount a little bit and let's get more shots on goal. And let's actually look at like the layer twos of Bitcoin, different scaling solutions. Let's get into the nitty-gritty, you know. We're also tossing around the idea of maybe doing a mining specific thesis. Mining and, you know, mining and exchanges, as you know, are the most likely companies and basically the only companies at this point that go public. So that's obviously the goal of VC. Yep. Is like get acquired, go public, you know, things like this. So, you know, it's something we're looking at really closely that we want to be a part of, but it's highly risky. So seems to make sense to kind of separate the miners from the rest of the fund that's operating more traditional products and service business, not with such extreme levels of leverage that all the miners seem to take on. You know.
Damn, you're a super interesting guy and you're so well connected into, you're really building with all the different roles you have. You're building out this ecosystem. Like, you're building the infrastructure by financing startups. You are working in the media. You're organizing all these conferences. You spread the word. You bring new people in. You connect people in the ecosystem. This is wild, man. It's really, really good. And I think you're under, represented. Like, you should be, your name should be way bigger and people should know more about you individually, but maybe that's also something you don't really want. But I definitely really enjoyed having you on, man. Thank you very much for talking to me, talking to our community. I'm really looking forward to see you in Amsterdam. And I also want to ask you the last question that I ask to everyone. So you're obviously into Bitcoin for a long time. What is your percentage of your total wealth that you have and hold in Bitcoin? Whereas I know probably a big part is also in Bitcoin Ventures, but like just specifically Bitcoin in cold storage.
I'm checking right now. I have $444.08 and the rest is in Bitcoin. So that's it, man. I have two credit cards. They're both maxed out and spent on Bitcoin on this recent dip. And that's it, bro.
Holy shit, that was one of the best answers I got. Yeah. Most people come up with some percentage. They say like, oh, more than 50% or 90%. And you're like taking it from the other way. I own $400. Probably you're in minus, like fiat terms, because your credit cards are maxed out.
Yeah,
so you're probably more than 100%, like 100% Bitcoin, but also minus
leveraged fiat. A little bit. Yeah. I don't have any, like, I don't have a mortgage or anything, so I'm chilling. The credit cards are pretty easy to service, but it's like, for me, like, I definitely don't recommend that. By the way, I mean, it's like, it's hard to live like hand to mouth, but. When I first got into Bitcoin, I was living pretty hand to mouth, like paycheck to paycheck. So I'm pretty comfortable doing it. If you're not comfortable doing it, it can be hard because you're going to have to be a forced seller of Bitcoin, which is something you never want to have to be. So you got to make sure you got a really good understanding of kind of your inflows and outflows before trying to be all in, you know?
Absolutely. Thank you, Alex. This was very inspirational. And keep up the good work. See you in Amsterdam and talk soon.
Thanks, man. Talk soon.